hold on to your butts. It's time for a new episode of Destroy All Culture, a sonic death ray from Dimension X that sounds exactly like a weekly podcast hosted by Adam P. Nave and Aiden Morgan. Exposure to Destroy All Culture is 100% fatal, so we put it on the internet. Now listen and die. Lethal effects may take up to 75 years. That's right, it's time for episode 134 of Destroy All Culture. I'm Adam P. Nave, and with me as always is Aiden Morgan.
That's right.
That's right.
Correct.
I want to try something different. You know.
I like it.
Okay, good.
I like asserting that people start off knowing what's right.
Yeah. So I thought that was a nice plan.
I agree.
So before we get into everything else, I mean, we all know there's a bunch of stuff we want to talk about. I did want to talk about the Riverdale thing.
Yeah. Let's the last episode, which I have not yet seen, "Fire Walk with Me," I believe is the title.
Sure.
Sure.
I'm like two or three episodes behind.
Oh, okay.
And I feel like I'm just done.
Fair enough.
And there are two reasons. Like, I started to slip behind because just Riverdale felt like it was just, not that it was treading water, just it had upped the level of incomprehensibility again.
Mm-hmm.
To that level where it stopped almost being fun. Like, it wasn't like, you know, that weird fun sort of like, they have funeral outfits for the cheerleaders. But was just more slipping into the same grind.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then Luke Perry died.
Yeah.
Mm. And I just don't know if I want to watch the show. Like, A, because you know they're going to deal, like, for the next bunch of episodes, we're going to watch Luke Perry, which is, just makes me sad.
Yeah.
And then they're going to have to deal with that, and it's just, it's not going to be good.
No.
I mean, I don't know, I mean, I feel bad for them, because there's no good way to deal with this, right? Like,
no.
It's not like they can film something to get him off, it's just one of these, he's going to die off camera. But given this show's propensity for things, it's just going to do the, and now Archie's even darker, and I don't want it.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'll change my mind after the end of the season and catch up and watch it and see. But I just, right now, I think I'm River done.
You've been Riverdaled.
I have, just right off the reservation.
You're River did, now you're River done. I get it.
Yeah.
I mean, like you, I'm a few episodes behind as well. The urgency of watching Riverdale just kind of faded away at some point because, like you said, it kept on grinding through one
right. Sort
of, like, absurd situation after another to the point where I just couldn't really enjoy the silliness anymore.
Yeah, and, like, once a show there is that feeling of, like, grinding, right? Like, I'm watching the show because I watch this show, but I'm not really enjoying it. I'm not really paying attention.
Yeah.
I'm watching it because I watch it. And that's usually when I want to stop watching a show. Like,
exactly.
There are other things.
Yeah, and I've got Siren and Roswell to watch, so come on, priority.
Right, people. And we also both have, because we should talk about this, we now have Whiskey Cavalier.
Yeah.
Which we both kind of were like, maybe we'll see last week after the pilot, and then they had their second episode, and now we're both in, I think.
Yeah, believe it or not. I did not expect to be...
No.
Find myself in that position.
I mean, but there is something nice, and this is part of what we were talking about last week, there is something very nice about that kind of homey feel of these old, you know, very much like Mission of the Week, you know, like the stakes aren't really there, they have a sense of humor, it's just kind of fun TV.
Yeah,
there's nothing wrong with that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it feels like someone said, let's make a Hangout show, and someone else said, let's make a spy show.
Right.
Well, let's do both at the same time and see what happens with that. There you go. One thing I am enjoying about Whiskey Cavalier is these first two episodes. They've got a really sort of like smart, sly visual style. Which often seems almost unnecessary for network television. But just thinking, for example, of... there's the scene where the two main characters are caught in the vault, in which, of course, where they spill sort of secrets, which cannot be transported out of the vault, but we get to hear them, so we transport them out of the vault. Then the vault opens, and they do a shot with the water coming out of the vault, and it's like, that's The Shining. You guys just did The Shining, but with water instead of blood, and you did it because you just felt like it.
Right, well, the thing is, like, they like their long shots, too, which is not normal in TV, but it is in the spy movie genre. Like, they're taking bits and pieces. Right now, they have a budget, I guess, so they can do it.
Yep.
You know, that bar set, which we both just, like, I think we both had that same moment of, like, okay, you know.
If they're going to hang out in a bar and, like, you know, basically shoot the shit with Josh Hopkins, I'm like, I'm completely in now.
Yeah, it helps the world. But also, that's a fairly big set. Like,
I know.
They didn't need to make it that big.
Yeah.
But it gives them room to play, you know? Mm-hmm. You could separate out characters, you can bring them together. Like, it creates a nice space.
Which, I always think it's funny because because there's always, like, the hangout, like, shows like this always have, like, the sort of, like, the planning and exposition area. So it looks like this is going to be it. And I remember in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, in the first three seasons, the planning and exposition area was the library. And everybody hated it because apparently the library set was too small. And it was always crowded with, like, cameras and equipment and junk. And it was always hard to get decent angles. And it was just a slog for everyone involved. So I'm just looking at that and I'm thinking, oh, look at that. They've got a large set. Now they can actually have fun in the scenes which are naturally going to be the dull ones, right? The setup bits.
So, the talking heads bits.
Right.
What's funny is, like, I kind of want to view the show just for a minute in my head as could we have started later? Like, I get that they want setup, because especially it's a network show, and you don't want to have to do flashbacks to do it. But I just have this picture in my head of, like, if you started the show with them hanging out in this empty bar. Yeah. And then they're like, okay, well, I guess we gotta go. And you're like, okay, these people all work together, they're doing something. And then they just pull out guns. Like, would it be more fun? And they kind of did that in the first episode, but not with them all together.
Yeah.
And I get why. Like, again, you want to, you know, introduce everyone and do all that. But I do think that it is something network shows especially have trouble with, is starting late.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it can be more beneficial.
I know.
Because let's face it, the promos and everything else, you know what the show is about.
Yeah, you go in. I mean, you have to. I mean, it's a network show. You need to know, or at least as far as the network is concerned, you need to know the premise going in. So, in order to have buy-in for the show, but it would have been a lot of fun if it had just started with a scene of a bunch of people hanging out at a bar. And you're like, well, like you say, oh, I guess these people work together. Then they pull out the guns, and you're like, ooh,
yeah,
that would have been awesome.
But you know, it definitely is like this. This is. Hopefully it's going to last. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
But again, at the very least, we have a fun little show for a little bit.
Exactly. Maybe we'll get 13 episodes. Maybe we'll get more. We will.
Yeah, I don't know how many it's supposed to be.
I'm not sure what the order is. Yeah.
Let's see if we can find out real quick.
Yeah. I'm up for that. I'm all up for knowledge.
I don't know. Nothing tells me.
Well, they know, and that's the important thing.
Yeah. I mean, it just has a production order, and it's a mid-season replacement, so it probably is 13 to 18.
Yeah. That's a fine with me.
Anyway.
Yes, anyway.
There was also a movie this week.
There was a movie. It was a Marvel-us movie.
Yeah. Yes, Captain Marvel came out, and of course we're going to spoil the hell out of it.
That's right. No, nothing. I'm just amazed that this is a movie that can be spoiled. Like, came with a plot twist, I was like, holy shit, this movie has a plot twist.
Right?
I honestly did not think that they were going to, like, do anything but give us, like, just a straight-up...
Yeah, that was just a brand new thing. Like, I loved it.
I was like, this is just going to be Captain. Here's Captain Marvel. Here's how she fits into the Marvel universe. You know, come back in you know, a month's time for Avengers Endgame. Like, seriously, that's all I was expecting going in.
Well, that's all they needed to do.
Right. So anything more.
But they decided to make an actual good movie instead.
Yeah, exactly.
So.
Yeah. That's was a surprise. And it's funny because I read a lot of reviews going in. I don't know why I do this, but I did. And a lot of the reviews were really on the meh side, and like on like a lot of sort of sites that I and sources that I normally go to, like Vulture.com, AV Club, etc., etc., and the Guardian. A lot of them sort of gave it just barely above, like maybe 3 out of 5, and saying, "Well, this is a pretty average film." And so I was expecting an average film, and what I got was a hell of a lot better.
So, yeah, I mean, I do think it's interesting that like the standard Marvel problem. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Is always the third act.
Usually.
Right? Like, I mean, because I'll rewatch a bunch of the Marvel films and I'm just, you know, bored for background noise type. Not that they're bad, I really like a lot of them, but that, you know, that's the thing, right? You can put them on.
Yeah, ever
but I will time. Usually, like, put them on and then kind of turn them off for the third act because I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I never need to see Iron Man. Like, I never need to see, like, the last 20 minutes of Iron Man again.
No,
I don't care.
It's the worst part of the movie by a long shot. Yeah.
And that's the standard thing with a lot of these films. Not all of them, you know, but a lot of them. And this kind of inverted that because I think the first 20 minutes were the worst part of the film.
Yeah, and I mean, I didn't dislike the first 20 minutes.
No.
Certainly.
But it was, they were struggling. There was definitely a sense of, like, oh, God, we have to do all this exposition.
I know. Yeah, I mean, they had to sort of set up her whole other life first. And
right.
They did it, and I think about as, frankly, I think they did about as good a job as they could have.
Oh, yeah. No, don't get me wrong. I'm just saying, compared to the rest of the movie, like, that was the weak spot for once.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the third act held. But it's once she gets to Earth, the movie just kind of takes off and doesn't stop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like in terms of like quality, at least, you know, I mean, it slows down, it does all the things movies do. you know, it's not Crank, but yeah, no, it's a lot of fun, and I actually did have a great laugh because I decided to rewatch Winter Soldier.
Oh yes,
the other night, just because I was in the mood for Winter Soldier.
Sure,
and I, you know, Captain America's talking to Fury after. Like, the opening, and he's all like, you know, why did you tell me about this? And blah, blah. It's like, you know, you don't trust anyone. And Fury goes, the last time I trusted someone, I lost an eye. And I just started laughing.
This is hilarious, because I know they had, like, they had probably not figured out.
Right, no, they had no idea that it was just, you know, the last time I trusted someone, I lost an eye.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And you're just like, okay, it must have been, like, this serious thing, right? Like, he was betrayed by somebody or whatever it is. It's, well, I mean, kind of.
It's like, oh, it's just a scratch.
Sure.
No.
Oh. And that thing is, like, you know, like all the Marvel movies, of course, it had a sense of humor. But it had not that it didn't have a different sense of humor, but it just, I don't know, it played with it. Like, the sense of humor came across a little different.
Yeah, Here's the really weird thing, and I don't know exactly how to describe what I'm about to describe, but I'm going to give it a shot. So this movie, sort of in the Marvel chronology, comes first, right?
Second.
Well, second. Yeah, after First Avenger. But I mean, it really, but its job is kind of to not set up the universe, but sort of encapsulate it and to sort of show what's come so far, but also to project what is to come. So it has this very odd attempt to balance a bunch of tones and different. So I feel like different Marvel movies are kind of peeking through at different points. I mean, obviously,
I can see that
you get Ronan the Accuser. I mean, you get some, like, you know, detail, but you also get, like, certain sets of jokes, certain sort of, like, shots. Like, there's some sort of, like, spaces and shots that I thought very much reminded me of Avengers. Especially the first scene of the Avengers when they go to the sort of the base. I'm like, is this the base where they keep the Tesseract? Because it sure as shit looks like it. You know, just stuff.
Well,
like,
and it is, you know.
Yeah.
It is Project Pegasus.
It is Project Pegasus, okay. So, and just things like some of the jokes were like, that is a Guardians of the Galaxy joke, but the tone is different. You know, so it lands differently. So there's all kinds of little sort of things about the movie. And here's the weirdest thing, and I mentioned this on Twitter, which is that I thought Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck, if they reached anywhere for inspiration, it was definitely from Whedon, but it sort of went past Avengers and actually pulls pretty heavily from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah, and, you know, bits of Terminator are in there.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, they literally shoot, like,
yes. Schwarzenegger. I thought that was perfect.
I love that. You don't even see the whole movie title. Also, interestingly, that the fact that it says true and then doesn't say lies, you know, the fact that you only get half that, is then, like, echoed in the dog tag, which one half says Carol, Dan, and the other half says Vers.
Yeah.
So I thought, that's clever. That's a
yeah, it was thing. It was, you know, smart when it needed to be smart.
It's smart when it needed to be smart. Also, many people pointed out the fact that the, like, a lot of this, there are a whole bunch of, like, little subtle Pulp Fiction Samuel Jackson references, which I thought was, which was worth a chuckle. But anyway, but the Buffy thing, like, there's that scene where there's the montage of her getting up, like, all the montages of her falling down, which is similar. It's like the divided dog tag. The montage of her falling down repeatedly is then matched by the montages of her getting up, right?
Of course.
But there's the one thing where she's at a baseball. She's playing a baseball game as a kid or a softball game. And then there's the scene where she's sort of like getting ready for the next ball. And that is directly taken from the final episode of Buffy. Like,
is it?
It is an absolute, just complete pull. And I was like,
yeah, see, I wouldn't get that.
No, you wouldn't, but I mean, because you have not seen.
Right. Yeah.
But it's the scene in Buffy when all the potential slayers are given their powers. So it's a montage of all these girls around the world suddenly being flooded with slayer power. Anyhoot. So there's that. So, but I mean, it's also the story of Buffy, which is of a young woman who has powers, but is essentially all her life told, like, her powers are restrained and controlled by people who are telling her that her powers are, like, that they're training her, but not controlling her. And it's that process of it's the other side of, like, education is constraint and control, which is what you get in Captain Marvel, and that's what they do.
Yeah. Also, just speaking of weird little Marvel things, I thought it was really interesting that in the comics, of course, in the original comics, you know, there's Captain Marvel, who becomes Captain Marvel, who's this Kree warrior, and then, you know, Carol Danvers is kind of working with him in his human disguise,
right?
At Project Pegasus, and ends up with this machine that blows up, and she gets powers. And in this, they're like, well, how do you replicate that? Because we don't want to have him necessarily.
Right.
But they just gender swapped him.
Yeah.
Which was perfect.
Yeah, that worked. That worked great. That was.
And then worked the Tesseract into it.
Mm-hmm.
As part of the energy source, you know.
Yeah, because you gotta have the Infinity Stones in there somehow. So there you go.
Right. At least, like, this is like the next last time, right? Like, after this, origin stories probably won't deal with them.
Exactly. That's. I think this is after Endgame. This is the end of the. I mean.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Of the Infinity Stone stuff.
But you know, again, I liked how they dealt with the problem. To update it, but not throw it out.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. No, that was clever. Yeah. It was funny watching a film that tried to, like, in some ways replicate the Phase 1 Marvel sort of ethos,
right.
but could not help but be, like, a Phase 3 film. So that was really, I thought that was really fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, and it had, like, bits of Doctor Strange in it, in terms of sensibility, and, you know. So there was a lot going on that pulled from everything, I think.
Yeah. I'm wondering if we're going to get Maria Rambeau, the daughter.
Well, this is a thing that I've been seeing going around that is really confusing people. The daughter is Monica.
Oh,
her mother is Maria.
Well, that's right. Sorry, I knew
and,
that.
And no, I've just been seeing people all around just calling the mother Monica, and I'm like, just because they hear Rambeau and they go, oh, well, and it's like, no.
Right.
Her daughter's Monica, so that she can grow up and, like, become Photon, which of course is her mother's call sign.
That's it. Yes.
Yeah, I think they mentioned not say the names enough so they confuse people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And hopefully they find a way to straighten that out.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think they'll managed to make that work. The only thing that's perhaps a little not disappointing about the movie, but the fact that everything is now jumping ahead like 25 years is that we're probably not going to get Maria Rambeau anymore.
I mean,
not in the current age. So,
well, no, I mean she'll be older, but like so is Fury. Like it should be fine.
That's true.
You know, she'll be there and retired and all this, but her daughter will be grown up and. I think that'll actually work really well, frankly, because it puts her kind of in a mentor role.
Oh yeah, well, this is what she's. They pretty much just say it with that little bit when the daughter says, "I just want you to think about what kind of example you'd be setting for your daughter," which I got a huge kick out of. Another thing that occurred to me while I was like rolling this movie back and forth in my head a little bit. Is that it also replicates that particular really well-worn science fiction trope of, you know, whenever there's aliens and humans, you always have to start talking about, well, what makes us human? Like, what's that irreducible core of humanity?
Yeah.
And of course, as always, you know, by digging down to the core of what the irreducible human core of a person, that's what gives the hero... the powers to, like, you know, make to, like, sort of to triumph, which is what happens here. But in this movie, the sort of the irreducible human characteristics, which are not just determination, but, like, empathy and emotion and loyalty, these are characteristics that are always coded as feminine. So I think one of the real revolutionary things this does is it takes... a very familiar idea, and usually those the characteristics are male, and the hero is a male. This time it gives these characteristics to a woman, makes the character a woman, and it doesn't make a big deal out of it. It just provides the model for humanity as female, and I loved it. I thought this is the real revolutionary thing. I mean, it's maybe not the first time this has been done, but this is the real deal. This is what we mean when we get like a hero that's played by a woman. So, yeah.
Yeah. No, I thought it did a terrific job. I want to see it again, and, of course, this week, I'm off to Seattle for Emerald City.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm already just like, I've been bitching with friends this morning, actually, just going like, I want to go see it again! I can't go see it till after Emerald City! I don't have time. But I would like to go see it again.
Yeah, I'm sort of seeing where I can maybe... dig some time out to go see it one more time. Maybe I'll see it on Tuesday evening or something.
Yeah, I think it rewards itself with another, you know, when you're not following the plot as much, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
You pay attention to little fun bits.
Yeah, exactly. I thought they did a good job of bringing out the mid-90s.
If you want to get picky...
Well, I mean,
a bunch of their references weren't in the right year.
I know.
But, I mean, I couldn't give less of a shit, but I just thought it was interesting. I was just like, yeah, no one cares.
Yeah. Alta Vista
and some of them
around.
Were very much played for, like, the current audience in this is going to feel old if we do this, let's do it. You know, the whole, like, loading thing and, like, Alta Vista and just, like, the computer plays, like... There's a certain segment of the audience is like, yeah, we know we're old. Shut up.
Yeah.
I wonder how longevity-wise that'll play.
You know, I thought I was glad they didn't do too much of that. I mean, they sort of make a couple of jokes. I mean, the loading thing is, where they're just sort of standing around and see
the That was the one I felt was like a bit too far.
Yeah, that was probably the sort of the weakest bit, but I still got a kick out of it. I just like the sort of... I loved the look on Brie Larson's face. She's like, what's it doing?
Right.
It's loading.
And I almost wanted them to, and they never would have, and there's no reason for them to. But in my heart of hearts, when she's in the little computer cafe, the internet cafe, and she's kind of like delicately typing, because again, like she's, you know, from like 6 years ago, like this wasn't a thing. And she kind of reaches over and kind of pokes at the mouse to make something happen. I really want her to lift up the mouse and just go, computer. But I realize that like there's like six people on Earth probably who would have really loved that joke.
That's computer. No, that's one of my all-time favorite Star Trek jokes.
I still every time there whenever my computer doesn't like work or something, you know, like especially like a mouse goes wrong or something like that. Like I have a wireless trackball, and I will still occasionally just lift it up and turn it over to the computer. Just in the confines of my own home, I still make that joke. I will always make that joke.
I know, me too. It, yeah.
Cannot help it.
Exactly. I thought, you know, I, by and large, thought they could have leaned in a lot heavier on the jokey bits. So I was grateful they didn't. I mean, and look, there's some like, you know, oh, there's Blockbuster, oh, there's a Radio Shack, haha. Those things aren't around anymore.
Right.
You know, so I was like, that's fine. But I just thought they, like when during the initial chase scene, when Fury and Coulson are driving off after them, it just looked 90s-ish. I think it was just the cars and just sort of just the general
right, and
like,
just the color grading even was very much a 90s film.
Exactly. Yeah. I think they did a good job of like, I mean, a lot aside from the brand stuff and the tech stuff. I mean, just getting the overall look right was really quite
okay.
Good.
So now we feel old because 90s movies are now period pieces.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that?
And they're treated like that when you film them, right? Like we had to get the color grading for the film right. It was different. It was just, it's like, oh man.
Yeah. And they shot on film. What the hell? I mean, it was a different era back then.
Also, can we just give a special mention to the thing? Okay, so movie starts, right?
Mm-hmm.
Movie's about to start, rather. Like, you know, we've had previews, which I do want to talk about previews for a second.
Sure.
After this, but you know, and you're waiting for like the and the music starts for the normal modern Marvel scroll.
Mm-hmm.
And then they did the thing.
Oh, the Stan Lee thing.
And I will tell you, like, they were just audible, just like, aw.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, same. Yeah, that was
so sweet.
Something. Yeah.
Like, that was just the classiest, like, simplest way they could have possibly done this.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently it was a Marvel Studios came to them, they're like, are you okay if we do this? And they were like, yes. Like, just for this movie.
Yep.
Like, I don't think they're going to do it again for... Maybe they will for Endgame, but I doubt it. Although, same year, so they might.
They might, yeah. No, that was really quite touching. Also, how
yeah, and
much...
apparently they did change the cameo a little bit.
Really?
Yeah, her reaction shot, which is very fourth wall breaking...
Yes.
...was added after he died.
Oh. That's sweet.
They were just like, you know what, just because, let's do it. Like, yeah. it did... It was a little jarring, like, I don't know if I love it.
I didn't mind it. I mean, because I was like, ah, good on you, Stanley. And then she makes the same, basically her face mirrored how I felt in that moment.
Right.
So I'm like, ah, that's great.
And
the fact that he was.
And I did love the mall rats thing killed me.
That
yes.
Great. I mean, considering that, like, it's all about.
It was.
I mean, considering that, like, in the mall rats, it's just. You know, Jason Lee sort of, like, hectoring him about, well, like, the thing's penis.
But I also just like that, given that, I mean, this isn't the last Stan Lee appearance. Like, he will have a cameo in Endgame.
Yeah.
And I think maybe in the Spider-Man thing, but maybe not. Probably.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that might be the last one, which would actually kind of be poetic, right? Like, the last cameo he gets in the Spider-Man movie.
Yeah.
But... This was the first Stan Lee cameo where he played Stan Lee.
Oh, you're right. I did not
also,
think about that.
Also, given the James Gunn thing that like he's this intergalactic force who actually is all of these other characters,
mm-hmm.
It means firmly that Stan Lee himself is one of them. Which, again, is just perfect. It just works.
Oh, my God. I don't know. I think my favorite Stan Lee cameo may still be the Spider-Man's the Spider-Verse one. I don't know why.
Well, all of like all 12 of them.
All 12. Well, I was thinking of
no,
the comics.
No, seriously.
Yeah.
I know, but my favorite one actually is one of the very subtle ones.
Mm.
I don't know all of them, but I do know because they pointed out one that made me just that was perfect. Apparently, if you freeze frame it, when they're lying on the street, the guy who says. Who steps over them when Miles goes, thanks, New York, is Stan Lee.
Oh, no way. Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he's like on the train too, because he's just this guy in New York, right? So you keep running into him.
Right. That's hilarious. Yeah, I don't know. I just love that one because it seemed to me to sum up Lee's character better than anything else. Sort of this combination of the inspirational and the mercenary all at the same time. Yeah.
But also, just talking about Spider-Verse, I haven't actually seen this, but apparently, on the Blu-ray, and if you get the digital, you can get this version as well, type of thing, with the extras.
Mm-hmm.
There's an alternate universe version of the movie, of Spider-Verse.
What?
Where they stitched all the deleted scenes back into the movie.
Oh.
Like, apparently some of them aren't, like, fully finished and all that, but someone who'd seen them mentioned that it was a really interesting thing, because if you watch some of the deleted scenes by themselves, you're like, well, why wouldn't they put that in the movie? It's great. And you watch the alternate universe version, you're like, oh, no, that does slow everything down weirdly.
Yeah.
So it's actually a lesson in, like, why you delete certain scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that's fascinating. I can't wait to watch that.
Oh, totally. Oh, okay. I'm in. I haven't watched any of the deleted scenes at all. So I'm...
No, I mean, I don't have it yet, so... Yeah. But anyway, moving on. Can we talk about how terribly hysterically wrong we are as people? As pop culture procrastinators.
Prognosticators?
Thank you. That word just slipped right over my head.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
I loved your email. Like, just, that was perfect.
Yeah, well,
so people who don't know.
For those who don't know. On the last, if on our last podcast, we talked about the episode of The Magicians where Penny, in the timeline 40, shows up briefly, and then we went on in the podcast going, oh, this is it. This is all, this Penny's story is finished. Next episode, it's all about Penny 40. Like, we literally just got it so hilariously wrong. Thank you, Magicians, for showing us.
And fuck, this episode was perfect. Just, you suffer from white male protagonism. I was just, oh my god.
Yeah, that was a nice bold choice to, like, sort of, I mean, for framing narratives, that's just kind of great.
Yeah, and well, they called themselves out as much as anything else, which I appreciate.
Yeah.
They weren't going, like, look at us, we're immune to this. They're going, no, we have this problem too. And we'd like to stop having it, and we need you all to recognize that this is actually a thing.
Right.
And again, like, I think the Katie story especially is just that, like, I want to watch more of that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, the Fenn stuff, I'm like, that'll be fine, whatever.
Yeah, no, that's cool. I mean, Fenn is almost, she's kind of a side character no matter what you do, but she's fun, but yeah, I always thought that one of the weaknesses of the Magicians was the way they've handled Katie, because they never seem to quite know what to do with her.
Well, it's like they can have Jessica or Katie and never both for very long at the same time.
Yeah,
something about it, I don't know. And I okay, fine, but yeah, no, Katie is a fascinating character.
Mm-hmm. And they've given her, I think they figured out how to give her something interesting to do at long last, which is excellent.
You know, but I also really did like just her whole thing of, like, I have my own life. Like, I'll help you guys out when I can, but I am not just this thing to be pulled up.
Yeah.
From the benches.
Exactly.
And again, like, the whole bit with the librarians is, again, it's fine. It felt like track work being laid, which is okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not in a bad way, you know, but just... Yeah. But I do like that the stories, at least those two, did merge and play off each other and explain a whole bunch of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of build to, oh, okay, this season isn't about the monster. This season is yet again, like, we're finding that, at least I'm feeling like, the central thing of the show is becoming the library versus everyone else.
Yeah, it seems... Yeah, they sort of figured out that it's an institution, more than like individual sort of
creatures,
which is a more robust and interesting enemy.
Yeah, I mean, and it comes down to control versus freedom, which is always
exactly
going to be something good to actually play with.
So I'm curious to see how the whole sort of promised sort of hedge witch uprising is going to work, because it looks like the library is going to start targeting the hedge witches now.
Right.
So,
but given that the school is kind of useless right now, you're going to have all these really well-trained people, quote-unquote, becoming hedge witches.
Yes.
And they're going to have a problem.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's funny how Breakbills has sort of become almost completely irrelevant. Considering in the first couple of seasons, everything was set there. Now it's just sort of like every so often they will show up to talk to the dean, but that's right. About it.
Well, I mean, but again, they were post grad students,
mm-hmm.
and they've moved on through work study essentially in Fillory.
Yes,
and they've moved on to.
That's a practicum.
Yeah. You know, but they've moved on now, and they are adults, and you get the sense that, like, all the characters have grown up and become adults.
Yes.
And now their school is basically asking for donations, and that doesn't go well a lot of times. So...
Sorry, I'm just picturing, like, the alumni committee.
Well, that's it, right? It's the alumni association. They won't stop fucking sending you email.
That's fantastic. Yeah, no, this
but
is...
But yeah, no, it's a great episode. And one of those things that it could have been a terrible episode in that, like, we're taking a break from everything.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. No, this was well done, I say.
And I hope that, like, the six stories last season, that this becomes a tradition.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Once a season, we have a check-in with the side bits and loop them all back in and go, no, this is a bigger narrative than you thought.
Yes, exactly.
You know, and again, like, and Penny 40 will still be playing a big role in the show.
Yeah.
Like, that promotion is not a meaning... And, like, who did he see?
Yeah.
At the end, like, who was he like, hey, welcome? It's like, oh, God.
Yeah, who's dead?
Who died?
Yeah. I was just trying to figure... I'm like, is this taking place sort of at the same sort of, like, timeline? Or are we looking for something?
Right.
You know, it was one of those things where I'm like, is this something that has not happened yet on this show? Something that's happened, or just something that's happened off camera, or something we're going to see. Yeah, I
kind of like my outside bet is it's that woman who was doing all that magic for the timeline stuff that we just met.
Oh,
that was poisoning herself.
Right. Oh yes. Yeah, that's
because that magic could come in handy again, and like having her on that side.
Right. As the horomancer.
I mean, I don't know, obviously, but like. I can't imagine it's like, oh, look, it's Quentin. Like, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, that would be a bit much. But, I mean, it would just...
Or it could be Jane Chatwin.
Oh.
That would be an interesting little twist, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would. Now, I saw the... I don't know if you saw, like, the little previews for the next episode?
I did not. I try not to watch those on anything.
Yeah. I have some bad news.
I mean, you can go ahead and tell me. It's fine. I just, you know...
It's Felicia Day. Her character's back.
Oh, is it?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Fair enough.
Fair enough.
That's fine.
Yeah. We'll make do. We'll enjoy the show. So.
There was a Flash episode. I don't know if you saw.
No. Tell me all about it.
It was titled King Shark versus Grodd. And like, so they're selling the show on there's gonna be this big fight, and the fight is like a little teeny bit of the last act, and like they start off with a bit of the fight and then flash back to 12 hours earlier, you know, and so it felt like they were kind of bait and switching a little bit, like it wasn't the main thrust of the episode. I mean, it was a Grodd episode and it happened to have King Shark for a lot of good plot reasons, mostly concerning the cure. And that's the weird thing. It's like, they keep saying how they want to use the cure, and they're all agreeing, and then they all go off and do different things.
Right.
Like, they're not watching their own previous episodes. It's jarring. It just really is weirdly jarring.
Well, I will have to catch up on Flash. I'm a little bit behind.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fine episode, but it is weirdly jarring.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, it sounds like a Flash episode, fine enough, but jarring stuff, and like you always often you kind of feel like, yeah, you've been promised one thing and sort of they've given you something else.
A little bit.
On the other hand, I want to talk about briefly, not this week's episode, the most recent episode of Doom Patrol, but the one before, Because I don't think we really mentioned this yet.
Not much.
If you recall, we were talking about the fact that we knew they were going to give us Animal, Vegetable, Mineral Man at some point.
Right.
And we were saying, how will they do it? Because in the comics, of course, he's crazy looking. And I've made a joke, well, will he have celery hands? But this is a point at which our prognostication was on point. Because, I mean, often I always think of, like, the low points of Supernatural for this. Is like you promise, like, a monster, and it's some dude in a flannel shirt with, like, you know, some prosthetic makeup on his arm. You know, here's a dragon.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a guy in plaid with some scales on his neck.
Right, which fits the aesthetic of Supernatural, but
it does. But on the one hand, but in this case, Animal, Vegetable, Mineral Man literally turned out to be a guy with one dinosaur head and like celery for hands, so,
like a crystal leg.
It looked exactly like the comic book cover. It was amazing. I was so impressed with the fact that they're just willing to do that.
Yeah, no, I thought that was fantastic. Also, this episode had something that made me laugh really hard.
Because
if you don't know the comics decently, you don't know something, like something behind the scenes of the comics,
mm-hmm.
this has hit a lot of people weirdly. So they, of course, brought in Mark Shepard this week.
As the Constantine...
Well, and that's the thing.
Yeah.
So a whole interview is like, oh, look, they have this Constantine ripoff. Okay. Now, if you know the comics at all, you know this character is actually from Doom Patrol.
Right.
Where he was also a Constantine ripoff. The joke being that Grant Morrison wanted to use Constantine. But at the time, Doom Patrol hadn't moved to Vertigo. This was still in the pre-Vertigo era of Doom Patrol. Because Vertigo's still very new. And Doom Patrol had already been running before Vertigo.
Right.
And it hadn't made that shift.
I see.
So, there was still the walled garden of Vertigo, and they wouldn't let Constantine be used outside of Vertigo. So he couldn't use Constantine. So he was like, well, fuck it, and just made a rip-off character of Constantine for Doom Patrol.
Yeah.
So, you know, so all these reviews are just like, oh, look, they're just ripping. It's like, yes, but that is, in fact, how that worked. that was the problem then, too.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like, I don't think Mark Shepard would make a great Constantine, but he makes a great knockoff Constantine.
I can't help but think that that's why they cast him.
Right.
They probably said, who's a good Constantine ripoff or knockoff?
And, like, and they looked over at Supernatural, and they're like, well, he's not there anymore, but my God, he actually could do it.
Let's bring him on. Yeah, I thought that was... anyway, it's funny, like, before... Who plays Constantine now?
Matt Ryan.
Matt Ryan, thank you. My brain would not cough up the name. I was going to say, before Matt Ryan, I might have said, yeah, Mark Shepard would be a good Constantine, but Matt Ryan just inhabits the shit out of that role.
Oh, yeah. No,
so,
Matt
so much
Ryan
so
is...
that, yeah, that I can't even imagine somebody else in that role anymore. So, yeah. I thought he did a great job. I got a huge kick out of this episode. I thought Brendan Fraser, I thought his voiceover work is just, it kills me. Just
yeah.
Oh, Nurnheim sucks. I'm just, fuck.
I just, again, like, even though, like, they give us Animal, Vegetable, Mineral Man, but somehow it's just like, well, we wouldn't go full Auton. Okay, we are.
sure.
Just fuck it. It's where this show is. It's just in that land of fuck it, and I love it so much.
Oh, I know. And the I think the signature line must be, Brendan Fraser's signature line in this show is shaping up to be the fuck.
Right. Also, we see Rita using her powers the way she does for the first time.
Yes. I've kind of been waiting for that.
Yeah.
I've been waiting for her to sort of become who she's supposed to be.
Right, and they're making it a journey, which is good for all of them. Like, they're making it this thing.
Yeah. Still, I'm still sort of waiting. I guess I'm not waiting. Maybe I am waiting. I guess for Negative Man to sort of come into his own a bit more.
Well, right, and they're having fun with it. Like, yeah. they're building it out, so it's,
yes.
you know, by the time they reach the end of the season, we'll have a thing.
Yes, yeah, but right now they're keeping it. I mean, it's nice that they're keeping the figure so kind of mysterious, or it's really ambiguous what his relationship
right.
is with, you know, with the human part of him and stuff. So this is going to be a thing. I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, no, the show is just delightful.
Yeah.
It's just so much better than it has any right to be.
I know. And
that's, like, sometimes I just weirdly doubt it, if that makes sense. Like, I don't doubt that the show's going to be great, but I'm just like, eventually they have to fuck this up, right? Like, they have to go too far or not far enough. Or, no, they know exactly what the fuck they're doing.
Seems like so far, yeah. And, yeah, it's just... And the whole sort of, like, construction of Nurnheim. I mean, it's only a couple of sets, but, I mean, it was just... I thought
it was a very Baron Munchausen feel.
Very Baron Munchausen. That's
which
exactly,
was perfect.
Yeah, precisely. And then it turns out possibly to be a snow globe in
right.
in Calder's study. I mean, or in that room. So
yeah.
that's... Sure.
Right? Why not?
Why not? Okay, I guess Calder has some idea what's happening. Or, like, you know, some closer relation to events than we thought, obviously. But, yeah, this is, so far, so good.
Yeah, I also still like the, you know, Cyborg trying to be like, we're a team, and we have briefings, and the rest of them are just being like, oh, shut the fuck up. Jesus. We get it. Other dimensions, fine, whatever. You know, just like...
There's other there are 37 other dimensions. Uh-huh.
It's just it's funny just because, you know, you watch the other CW shows and you know they take this all very kind of seriously.
Yeah.
And then you get Doom Patrol, they're just again they're legends, you know, it's that kind of like meh.
Exactly.
Oh, speaking of CW and legends.
Uh-huh.
There's a rumor, and it's still an unconfirmed rumor, but it's one of those like it sounds like it might actually be happening.
Uh-huh.
That the CW wants to do a new Constantine show.
No way.
Yeah, that apparently, like, the reaction to Matt Ryan in Legends is so strong that they're like, we don't want him to leave Legends, but also we want to do a Constantine show, and how can we do this?
Hmm. Well, I mean, there's only two ways to do it, really. Either you drop his participation in Legends down a lot, or you wait for Legends to end, and then you start Constantine.
Right, I mean, and a lot of people, I mean, the general... feeling is that Legends has next season and that's it.
Yeah.
Because the ratings just, I mean, it's a great show and everyone loves it. And it gets a lot of good critical acclaim, but it's still dropping viewers.
How? How is it dropping viewers? But I mean, no, I know exactly how it's dropping
yeah.
viewers.
So, like, it might just be we just give up on it and just do a Constantine show.
Sure. I mean, they couldn't do a worse job of Constantine than the first shot at Constantine.
Well, again, and by the end of that season, they had it down, but I do think that this slightly different CW version is stronger.
I think so. I think
they brought more lightness back into it, which
yep.
is not a thing a lot of people associate with Constantine, but does exist. It's just a very specific type of humor.
Exactly, yeah. Speaking of specific types of humor, the when Kipling in Doom Patrol summons Baphomet for prophecy, it turns out
yeah.
to be literally the prophecy sung to Horse with No Name.
Uh-huh.
That was... I was just watching that and going, what the fuck?
Right. I also liked that that wasn't a unicorn. It looked like it was a horse with a sword through its head.
Yeah. It wasn't a unicorn. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, and good on them for making it very clear what song that was and cutting away before they had to pay for it. I was like, that was superb editing right there. That was...
That's right. Yeah.
Although, speaking of music and switching gears completely...
Mm. Yes.
I have a pick of the week, besides Captain Marvel.
Oh, please, go on. Go on.
There is a book I have been reading, because mm-hmm. I read books.
Ooh, fancy man. All right.
Let me just look up the author here. Taylor Jenkins Reid wrote a book called Daisy Jones and the Six.
Hmm.
And, you know, I'm not surprised if you haven't heard of it. It just came out this week.
You are correct. I have not heard of it.
But it is a book about a 70s band called Daisy Jones and the Six. And their, you know, fictional rise to fame and falling out and breakup. But it's written like an oral history.
Oh, nice.
With, you know, it's all just, like, interviews with the bands, and, like, they're contradicting each other, and, like, certain members, like, and it's just, and it feels like an actual oral history.
Cool.
Like, it has that, you know, because faking that is not easy.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy to make it too pat or anything like that, but this actually manages to land.
Hmm. That is fascinating. I know, because I know how tough it is to write a fake oral history, because I wrote one from the radio show that I do, and it's really, I mean, it was supposed to be a parody of an oral history, and it's still tough to do, like, especially for radio, because you have to, like, make sure that everybody's identified and, like, you can follow along. But yeah, just so kudos to anyone who can do it well.
Yeah, no, this is like a great. A great fun read. And it just, again, like, if you like oral histories, it's perfect. And if you like the 70s music scene, like, it feels right.
Yeah, I will have to. So who's the author again?
Taylor Jenkins Reid.
Taylor Jenkins.
R-E-I-D. And she's written other books, like, you know, there's, like, the one about, like, Hollywood. I don't know if any of these are also oral histories, like, fake oral histories. I don't think so. But, yeah, no, it's just, it's an achievement. You know, it has that same feeling of, and not to compare it to, but it has that same kind of rough feeling of Almost Famous. Like, you know the band is fictional, but all the beats are real, if that makes sense.
Yep, exactly. I know exactly what you mean.
So, and the characters all feel like actual people you might have heard of, but haven't for some reason.
Oh, this is really... Sorry, I'm just looking at her website. Sounds like she's got some interesting stuff. Oh, she wrote Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo. Okay.
Yeah.
Which I am... somewhat familiar with. That's popped up. I remember popping up on some, like, favorite books lists. So there you go.
Yeah, I think, like, Pop Sugar loved it or something.
Yeah. Oh, Pop Sugar.
I know. But anyway, we're coming close to the hour mark.
I suppose we are.
We can play some music unless you have something else you want to talk about.
Let's see, I think we went through all the things.
Alrighty. Well, we'll play some music and...
There is one small thing I want to mention.
Yeah.
And it's actually about Alita Battle Angel.
Okay.
And the fact that disappointed trolls have actually kind of ruined Alita Battle Angel for me just by trying to sort of... embroil it
prop
in,
it like, up as like a, this is a, the thing you should be
as in a non-existent battle against Captain Marvel. So it's actually made me think that maybe that movie is worse than I think if those people like it. Like, shit, maybe I'm missing something about it that makes it crappy.
No, I think it's just I think they like it for all the reasons that you didn't.
Fair enough.
You know, that it purports to be this great thing, but it's still like, you know, she gives her heart to the first person she meets. Like, it's that.
Right. That.
And also they keep going like, you know, you should support an original film. And it's like, how is this any more original than Captain Marvel, frankly? They're both adaptations of other things.
Exactly. Yeah, existing properties. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck off, people. Anyway, so that's all I wanted to say.
That was, okay. Also, when we will cue some music, woo!
Woo.